This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. Sports Daily, mornings on 97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody, to another edition of Sports Daily. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here with you on a Wednesday. What day is it? It's hump day. We're glad to be here with you. Happy Sports Daily Wednesday. If you were up late again with the Royals last night, I'll raise my hand. They were maybe a little groggy this morning, and they didn't make it worth it last night like they did on Monday. But here we are anyway, and we're glad to be here with you. On a Aloha Hawaiian shirt Wednesday, Tommy, I see that you slipped your mind again here this morning.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're expecting. I mean, I think by this point I've made my stance relatively clear.
I think what you could do is just set a reminder on your phone on Tuesday nights or Wednesday morning to grab your best Hawaiian shirt. That's what I do anyway. So I'm certain that I don't forget. Max is participating today. He already sent me a text. I appreciate that, Max. And here we go. Royals lose. We get flag football in the Olympics. We've got Shreyas Lada in. I think we're going to have Kevin Saul in, Wichita State baseball in a tournament. They're out in some travel-y time zone differences, so we're hoping to connect there. All kinds of good stuff this morning. We'll have some giveaways for you. Tommy, how are you?
I'm tired. And it's not because of the Royals. Honestly, I didn't stay up super late. I watched until about, the sixth inning or so, and then I went to bed. And my dog woke me up at like 2:30 in the morning to go to the bathroom, and then I couldn't go back to sleep. And it was about 5 a.m. and I'm laying in bed and I'm like, man, I got to get up soon. And I'm a little groggy, a little tired this morning, and not because of the Royals playing out west.
Well, not because of the weather either. Probably because we're old. The Royals do lose. We get the Thunder flexing a little bit on Minnesota in the first game. It was close for a while, and then the second half, it just opened up on that. Wichita State baseball loses its opener, can't handle the conference pitcher of the year. But I think that, honestly, Tommy's the story yesterday, this flag football thing out of the Olympics. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty fired up about that. My only concern is, like, who's going to play against the USA in this thing? Like, What like, this isn't one of those international sports, I don't think. Who's going to play against us? But either way, it's going to be awesome. You kidding me? NFL players out there for the Team USA in a flag football, it's going to be fantastic.
Is it weird if I say I don't really care? I mean, it's fine.
I think so.
It's fine. Like, look, I'm not going to like not watch it when it comes around and everything, but I there hasn't been a single moment in my life where, you know, I've been watching the Olympics and I've been like, you know what this Olympic Games really needs? It really needs flag football. I've literally never had that thought one time. Doesn't mean that it won't be cool when it, you know, all happens and everything. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get some really cool players from the NFL that will be on Team USA and whatever. Like, that's great. I don't know. I mean, I saw all the reporting yesterday about it and I'm like, all right, cool. Like, doesn't really move the needle for me, but I guess it's fine.
You know what your problem is? Hawaiian shirts, not getting excited about flag. You're just a fun hater. You're just a fun hater, and I don't know. I don't know what to do for you. There's nothing. There's no help. There's nothing we can do.
Hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin, and the things that I get behind, and things I don't.
That's right. That's right. No, I do think it's. I think it's pretty cool. I'm concerned that we'll just wipe the floor with everybody and it won't be that competitive. But I do think that honestly, the most interesting part of the news is that the owners were like, yeah, we're good with it because of injury, right? Like it's sometimes there's resistance to stuff like that and they weren't. And I think for the NFL and maybe they got in their ears, like there's probably not a better opportunity to grow the game of football internationally than the Olympics. I wouldn't think. Could it be a disaster? Sure, it could. Remember breakdancing? Like, yes, it could be not that interesting, but I think it will be. And I think, you know, for the Olympics, and if you're, I assume NBC, like it's the best news you could have ever gotten for the Olympic Games is that now you get to attach, you know, a bunch of NFL players, whoever it might be in 2028. Patrick Mahomes has already made his stance clear that he wants to play in it. I don't know that he would be my top choice for a flag football team, man. That's the other part too, that makes it fun for me. Like immediately it's like, oh, who should we put on the team? Like that's where my brain goes. And I'm like, Mahomes. Yeah. I don't know that Mahomes would be the flag football quarterback that I'd want. I mean, we're looking at you, Lamar and Jaden Daniels. Like who can run around like that? Who's going to be impossible to catch to rip a flag off? Who's going to play defense on this team? Like that's the kind of stuff we were water cooler in yesterday. Well, I think it's fun.
I think, you know, yeah, Lamar, Jaden Daniels. I mean, Justin Fields would be phenomenal, I think, in a flag football game. But the thing about Mahomes is that he's kind of sneaky fast, right? He's got that sneaky athleticism that, you know, the opponents probably wouldn't recognize until it's too late and there's no way to get his flag.
What did Robert Saleh famously call it? His old man trot? They've done scientific studies that his lateral speed is maybe the best in the NFL. I get all that. I just don't know. Like, we're going to need some time here and hopefully they'll maybe have some warm up. I haven't spent a second with the Pro Bowl doing flag football, not a second. So like, I don't know.
And maybe that's why I'm not, maybe that's why I'm not super excited about this. Like, it's fine. I'll watch it. It's the Olympics. It's during a time when we don't have football typically in the summer and all of that. But I think some of it's because I don't care about the Pro Bowl flag football. That doesn't get me excited. I don't watch it ever. And so, you know, I think that this is kind of along those same lines.
Yeah, but that, you know, when the Olympics start, and maybe I'll watch anything in the Olympics.
Sure,
like I don't care what it is, if it's especially if it's Team USA. And so this I'll actually know. I will be excited for this. I might be more excited for like roster selection than the actual games because I think it's interesting. But that news comes down yesterday. I didn't even know they were taking a vote. Like I didn't even know this was happening.
Well, I think because everybody's been focused on the tush push and that ban and the vote on that. And that's been kind of front and center in what the NFL owners are voting on. That this didn't really get all the attention. I mean, it's been all about what's going to happen with the tush push.
It was just there. It was just right there yesterday. It was like, oh, they're voting. Oh, they passed it. Oh, wait, what? What are we doing? Oh, yes. And then the juices start flowing. Tush push. Boy, I hope it's gone. I don't like it. We talked about it yesterday. Maybe we'll talk about this a little bit later. I don't like it. I hope it's gone. I think it's not worth our time anymore. All right. So Tommy corrected me. The tush push is not worth our time. It's a boring play. But we'll let's get into that in a little bit. Tommy corrected me. We do not have Shreyaslata. I forgot he was traveling. So we will not have Shreyaslata this week, which is okay. We're still waiting on that draft deadline, basically, for KU to fill out the roster. So it's a good time to give Shreyas a little bit of a break. So we'll have maybe Kevin Saul if we can get connected. I'll check in with him and see if his travel schedule allows it. In the next segment, let's talk about this Tush Push. Let's talk about the Royals. Same old story. Rinse, wash, repeat, right? Not enough offense. And we will continue to try to understand it as best we can and navigate through it and let Royals fans vent frustrations. You can call us and do that at 869-1240. You can leave us video comments on Facebook, YouTube, and X and do that as well. It's all there for you today. We'll have some giveaways. Thanks for listening to us on the Odyssey app. If you missed yesterday's interview with Paul Mills, Wichita State men's basketball coach, you can go to the Odyssey app and you can catch that, which is where you'll find Shocker Baseball later today. All right, we'll come back. More Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. If you want to win some HTO, I am celebrating here Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. Max is celebrating. Tommy's not. That's because we're getting into the spirit of the summer season. And we'll do it with a little iced tea for you right now as well. More than 26 flavors to choose from, and you can get a free one from either East Wichita, West Wichita, or in Derby right now by giving us a text. You send the keyword T to 20357. That's T to 20357. That'll get you an iced tea from HTO, any of the three metro locations. Message and data rates apply. You can enter once per day. Welcome back into Sports Daily. We'll still try to connect with Kevin Saul, but they're in the middle of a baseball tournament. We knew it was about a 50-50 proposition today. No worries. Shocker Baseball loses. They go up against Conference Pitcher of the Year. Yesterday, Tommy, looks like Conference Pitcher of the Year. Went 8 innings, struck out 13 guys, and now they've got to, you know, climb their way through a loser's bracket. And they got on a, you know, a streak to end the season that'll be kind of the streak it will take in this moment to get through. You can hear Shocker Baseball today. Coverage begins around 4 o'clock, we think, out in Clearwater for that AAC tournament. They're kind of a 40 minutes after the conclusion of a game situation here. So we'll get them there just as quick as we can. But the Shockers they got their back against the wall now.
Yeah, they do. I listened to a good portion of the game yesterday afternoon with Mike Kennedy, and, you know, it sounded like early in the game, things kind of got away from Wichita State. You know, they gave up some runs to Charlotte, and at that point, it made it tough for them to kind of crawl their way back. And, you know, so yeah, their backs are up against a wall. It's do or die time for Wichita State for them to make a little bit of noise in this conference tournament.
Yeah, and we'll see if they do. And we'll hear it here on KFH today, and we'll let you know tomorrow if they're able to do it. Let's go right into the tush push, Tommy. We talked about this for a second. We touched on it a little bit yesterday with Felix Johnson, but it's been a while since we really voiced our opinion. I don't like it. I think it needs to go. I guess I don't know. I don't recall where you sit with it. I think it should be gone. I don't like the play.
I actually don't think that it should be banned. I think ultimately that's what will happen. I think that, you know, the NFL owners and all of that, they'll vote to ban it and, you know, have it not be part of what the Eagles want to do, or really any team for that matter. I really don't think that that's the way to stop it. I think that you've got to be able to defend it better. I think it's on the, you know, the course of each individual team that plays the Eagles to be able to shut them down. You know, I don't like that it's going into the hands of the owners to decide its fate. I just think your defense needs to be better.
Well, I think the problem is that there's no way for the defense to be better, but that's not the problem for me. I mean, it's not going to end my, like, I'm not that worried about it, but I do think the NFL has an opportunity, because really right now, one team does it perfectly. Everybody else isn't quite as good at it. And none of this is like to punish the Eagles. I don't really like the Eagles, but it's not to punish the Eagles. That's not it at all. To me, it's as boring as you can get. And we're in the business of a sport, a league, a game that is trying to never be boring. And it's very boring. It gets the worst play in football. It takes strategy out. It takes what would be one of the most exciting plays in football and makes it the most boring play in football. We've got the league constantly changing rules on kickoffs and all of these things to try to make things more exciting and better. For those reasons, to me, it's a no-brainer. Like, it's not a fun play to watch. It takes this, you know, the suspense and the strategy out of short yardage situations, which are some of the most key and critical situations in a football game.
So why not, if you're the Eagles or if you're an offense that can execute it at a high level, then why not do that? I mean, I don't ever fault the Eagles from doing it, because they're successful at it and they can convert on these short yardage situations. So then I think the strategy then becomes, if you're a defense, stop it. Like, do what you can do to try to stop it. And maybe that's the whole thing, is that it's impossible to stop, but I don't think it's impossible. I think it's difficult to stop, but, you know, I think that it's not like we're banning other plays just because teams have a good amount of success in executing the play. Like, you have to counteract it with what your defense is doing to try to stop the offense from gaining yards or getting into the end zone or whatever the case might be. I just don't like the fact that you're basically taking it out of the hands of the players to try to let the game play itself out. You've got to elevate it to the owners to ban a certain play. I just don't like that.
Well, I get it, but they change the rules all the time. Like, that's the thing. There's a precedent here. They change formational rules. They change the rules to
Tell me what they've changed as far as an individual play is concerned that one team is really good at executing and other teams can't stop. Because I don't think there is a precedent.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it from there's only one team that does it, I guess that's a little bit different. But the rules are changed in the league almost every single year, right? We all talk about all the time the rules are now benefiting the offense more than the defense. They change what constitutes a catch or what's called pass interference or what's called, like, they do that kind of stuff all the time. Most of the time we know it's to help offenses, to help, you know, elevate scoring. We've changed, you know, roughing the passer penalties. We've done all of these things.
Yeah, but that's a player safety thing. And I'm not sure.
Well, they're saying this is a player.
They're
safety
saying
thing.
It's a player safety thing. It's the other teams that don't feel like they can stop
the line of scrimmage for a defensive back being more restrictive. That's not a player safety thing. That's so it's easier to throw the ball and score points, right? Like, they, you know, they, because the league wants more points. They don't want games to be 14-13. And I get it. I understand. That's why I never have a problem with any of that stuff. I think it's fine. This will be a good discussion. And I'm going to have to look that up. I don't know off the top of my head. All right, let's take a quick pivot here. We do have Kevin Saul. We've been trying to connect. We'll have him via audio this morning, which is just fine. Kevin, are you out in Florida? How are you this morning? Kevin, can you hear us? All right, we'll try to get that connection here in just a second with Kevin Saul. We'll take the tush push here, but we'll get Kevin in the break. We'll do that in the commercial break if we can. Let's just go with the tush push. I don't know why the league wouldn't change the rule. It's not about the Eagles. It's not about, to me, it isn't. Like, I commend the Eagles, honestly. I commend the Eagles for being able to do it. I think it's brilliant what they've done with it. I think their execution of it is impressive. The play itself to me is boring. Like, it's not an exciting play. And it's not even just because there's lots of not exciting plays. It's that in that situation of a football game, that should be your most exciting moment of a game. There, you're trying to extend, you're trying to get the first down, and it becomes this like go-to. And because make no mistake about it, if it's not outlawed, everybody's going to figure out how to do it and do it well. And so then now, like, every game we watch, it's just like third and one is irrelevant. And I don't think you want that if you're the NFL. I don't think you want third, just like they don't want the kickoff to be irrelevant.
I mean, look, I think that if you're going to ban the tush push, it ends up being a pretty slippery slope, because at that point you ban that. Why not just ban quarterback sneaks in general? Why not just ban a short yardage?
Well, if you're
yardage,
looking for player safety, why
not ban a short yardage fullback run? I know not very many teams have a fullback anymore, but some teams do, and they utilize that to try to convert on third down. Why not ban a power run situation? There have been times the Chiefs have given the ball to like a nose tackle or, you know, somebody like that, to get the ball across the yardage. Like, teams are always trying to find whatever the most effective way is to convert on a short yardage situation. So if you're going to ban the tush push because the Eagles, and by the way, it's not just the Eagles, the Bills are another team that they run a variation of that fairly regularly. If you're going to ban something that penalizes really those couple of teams who do it really well, then, you know, maybe there just needs to be sweeping rules in general about what you can and can't do on short yardage. I don't think that if you ban the tush push that you can really stop there, because then you've got all these other plays that are very similar to the tush push that ultimately I think they end up, you know, working the same way basically.
So I just pulled up, and this is it's such an old article that it doesn't even format correctly. You've got 1996, they changed the 5-yard contact rule for defensive backs. In 1995, a receiver that was knocked out of bounds can now return back in instead of being taken out of the play. That changes the spirit of a game. A defensive back blows you up, hits you out of bounds, and you can't come back in. Like, so that's a rule that absolutely changes the way you play defense. They do this kind of stuff all the time. And I don't think that it's saying you can't, you know, have a quarterback sneak. You basically, the only change is you can't have somebody behind you that pushes you across. That's it, right? It's not, and like, just like an offensive lineman can't pick a wide receiver up and throw them across the line, like, that's not legal either. So we do it all the time. I just think it's like, and I get it. I get the discussion about it, but to me, like, it's a simple reason that you change it, and it's that it's because it takes away the enjoyment of a football game.
There's a simple reason why teams want it banned, and it's because they can't stop it. That's the reason why. It has nothing to do with the enjoyment of it. But that, I mean, and that's, you know, you want to talk about like the spirit of it all. That's the reason why. Like, the Green Bay Packers can say whatever they want, or you can start throwing out words like player safety and like whatever. At the end of the day, the reason why some of these teams are on board with it is because they can't stop it. That's simply the reason why. So, like, let's just get real about it. Like, and I know they're never going to do that, but like, if the Packers like put in the in their proposal, yeah, we want to ban this because we can't stop it and we don't think other teams can stop it. Okay, like, at least we're being straight up and honest about the reasons why.
That's 100. It's still the reason why to me. Like, we're agreeing on that. Like, that's 100% the reason why, is because you can't stop it. But because you can't stop it, to me, it's that's what I'm saying. Like, it's taking that exciting play.
But here's the other thing. Here's the other thing too. And this is an article from ESPN. So I'm going to ask you this question. Do you know what percentage the tush push appeared in all plays across the NFL last year? What the overall percentage was? I know the Eagles run it, the Bills run it, but out of all the plays across the entire league,
how many third and ones did it, or how many short yardage?
Total plays in general. How many times did we see the tush push in general in the NFL last year?
I have no idea.
It was less than 0.5% of all plays.
Right, but
0.28% of the plays across the entire league last year were the tush push. I think it's a fair stat because it's so
many plays. How many plays in the NFL were a kickoff? What percentage of plays in the NFL last year were a kickoff? I don't know, right? Like, probably the same percentage.
But we're not talking about we're not talking about banning kickoffs. Like, that's not.
They absolutely took what a kickoff was, turned it upside down, and reinvented it.
Sure, they changed it. Yeah, they absolutely did that. What I'm saying is that it's such a small portion of the actual plays over the course of an entire season across the entire league, but it's getting all of this crazy attention. I just don't understand why. Like, defenses, do a better job at stopping it. That's the answer. It's not about banning it. It's about, because then why not just ban the entire quarterback sneak and fullback runs and offensive linemen getting handoffs and like all of that? Just ban all of that if you're going to ban the tush push. Do a better job at stopping it.
I'm not arguing with the success of the play. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying it's not good for football. In my opinion, it's not good for football. It's a boring play. It takes a third and one, takes a fourth and one, takes a short yardage situation.
Do you think every time, you remember when Anthony Sherman was the fullback for the Chiefs? Do you think anytime he got the ball on third and one, that was exciting? Absolutely not. It wasn't exciting. So if we're going to go,
he did
a good portion
not
of the time.
Not at 90%, which is where the Eagles
okay,
were.
So let's use another example here. Every time Mike Allstott got the ball back in the day, he converted for the most part. He was a very successful fullback. It was a pretty
one of my favorite players of all
time. It was a pretty boring play. It was a fullback dive. He got the ball and he converted. If we're going simply off of the criteria of what's exciting and what's not, there are tons of plays that are not exciting whatsoever. That's subjective, by the way. That's not objective. It's an opinion on what we think is exciting and what's not. But if we're going simply based on, well, let's ban plays that aren't exciting, that's a really, really bad precedent.
Maybe I said play. That's not what I mean. It's the situation they're taking away from. Like, it's the situation of, like, it's a 90% conversion. It's a, all right, it's done. It's fine. Look, this isn't one where there's like a right or wrong answer. I get it. This is a total opinion discussion. For me, I don't want to see the play anymore. I get it. I totally get why it should not be banned. I get it's not a player safety concern, at least that we've ever seen. Like, that, none of that. Like, I don't buy into any of that. I just think it's not a fun thing when you're watching a football game to know without a doubt, like, this team's going to convert every short yardage situation. I don't like that Jalen Hurts is, you know, I want to know what kind of quarterback he is. Not that he rushes for 20 touchdowns a season. Like, I don't know. And this is all. Again, I get it. This is all going to be, what do people think about it? I'll tell you this. My opinion on this wouldn't change no matter who the team was. It could be the Cowboys and Dak Prescott doing this, and I would still say I think that that's not good for football. I think it takes away the exciting part of a game and it makes it boring. And I don't think the NFL, and that's why I ultimately think it's going to get banned. And they can say whatever they want to say, but the reality is they don't want to lose that high intensity moment from a football game, because what I think will happen is everyone will learn how to do it better. And now we'll see every team start doing it, right? Because you can't stop it. Like, the answer can't be just stop it, because you can't. Like, that's why it's so effective. It's when you do it right, you can't stop it. And teams will draft a tush-push quarterback, and they'll all learn how to do it. They're not going to ask maybe, you know, Aaron Rodgers to do it, but they'll have a guy on the roster that comes in for a tush-push. The Chiefs should have done this with Blake Bell, by the way. I've said that for years. They should have been doing this with Blake Bell. But that's what I think that's what will ultimately happen down the road. And I think that's why they're going to put a stop to it now, because I don't think I don't think the league, people may want to see it. I don't think the league wants to see it, because I think the majority of fans like, really? Like, now what are we going to do? Are we going to make it first and 12 instead of first and 10 to try to create more, you know, or less of these situations? I just think that's the slippery slope I'm afraid of.
Here's a really good comparison. This isn't from an article from the New York Times back in 2015. And it talks about the 14 years up to that point in 2015, the 14 years that Tom Brady was the quarterback for the Patriots. And he rushed. He did quarterback sneaks all the time. Like, that's what he did. And he had his success rate in 14 seasons up to that point with the quarterback sneak was 91.3%. And he wasn't being pushed from behind. It wasn't a tush push. It was a traditional quarterback sneak, and he converted either a first down or a touchdown 91% of the time when he did a quarterback sneak. Defenses couldn't stop it. There was never a proposal, though, from opponents saying we need to ban Tom Brady doing the quarterback sneak.
No, you're right.
Because
you're
we right. can't stop it. And, like, and they could have easily thrown in there, like, you know, it could be really dangerous for the quarterback. I mean, we saw Patrick Mahomes' kneecap be on the side of his leg from doing a quarterback sneak. There are always going to be player safety issues on any play. But we never saw opponents submit to the owners, hey, we need to ban the quarterback sneak because Tom Brady is converting it 91% of the time. That's a higher conversion rate than the tush push.
I agree. That's a really good one. The only thing I would say is they weren't trying it nearly as often as the Eagles do it. We'll get to some of the viewer comments and some of that as we make our way through. Now, I believe we have Kevin Saul. Kevin, can you hear us?
I got you guys. How are you this morning?
Good. There we have it. Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul joining us. Are you out in Florida, Kevin?
No, I'm actually not. We celebrated our oldest son's graduation from WSU Tech last night, and got a few meetings today and working our way towards the weekend. But if our baseball team can advance a little bit more here, I'll certainly make an effort to get down there this weekend.
Well, congratulations to your son. Congratulations to all the graduates, college, high school, everyone. Such an awesome and exciting and fun time of year. I know most people get really excited for all the graduates, so you know, tip of the cap to everybody out there. So baseball yesterday, Kevin, it's always interesting. I'm glad this is a double elimination tournament. I wish that softball was, but I'm always glad baseball is, because I think you get a better representation of a team and not just a team that has a really good starting pitcher. And that's what Wichita State ran into yesterday. We kind of hoped that Charlotte might try to save Gillespie. They didn't. Most teams don't do that. And so they run up against a guy that strikes out 13 batters in 8 innings and never really had a chance to get in that one. I don't know what else to say about that one other than it's luck of the draw a little bit when you have to go up against a guy like that.
Well, luck of the draw. And again, I'm really intrigued. I love sports radio, guys, and I'm really intrigued by your conversation on the tush push. But the way to not get into that situation is to not be the 7 seed and play better during the regular season, which is certainly the expectation here. But you know, you knew going into that game last night, based on his numbers, it's ridiculous, guys. It's like 120 strikeouts and 20 some odd walks. He's a strike machine. And the breaking ball was working really well. We knew if he was on his A game, we were going to have to hold Charlotte to a run or two. And so obviously that didn't happen. But at the end of the day, we've got an opportunity against South Florida today. We beat South Florida in game 2 of the regular season series, so it'll be a similar matchup as that. We had great starting pitching that game that I think went into the 7th If I'm recalling correctly, I believe that was Brady went into the seventh. And so we'll have a similar setup today. It'll be interesting to watch, see how our guys respond.
And the reality is it's going to take a long win streak. I think the good news is, or the optimistic look at it is, that's what the Shockers did in the season. Five wins in a row. It'll take something like that now if Wichita State wants to extend the season. And they'll have a chance. That game today, it'll be the second game of the day. We think around 3:30, maybe even 4 o'clock. Sometime after the first game, 47 minutes after the first game, is when that game against South Florida will happen. And we'll see if the Shockers can extend the season. Shockers softball, Kevin, was interesting yesterday. We saw a lot of transfers out of the program. That feels new. There's not usually roster movement with softball other than graduation, right? What's going on there that you can tell us?
Well, I would share with you, based on, you know, the journey of the season and everything that goes on day in and day out in your programs, I don't know that the coaching staff or myself, based on all the conversations we had, are incredibly surprised by the movement that we saw yesterday. But at the end of the day, in all of our programs, we've got an opportunity to get better quicker if we can crack the nut on knowing the type of player beyond technical skill and ability, knowing the type of player that we're getting through the portal certainly will be to our advantage. And so, again, not a lot of surprises from our perspective in terms of portal entries on the softball side. And I know Coach Bredbenner and the staff are laser focused on replacing and improving the roster this offseason.
Yeah, it's interesting. It'll be new to the program, though, right? To kind of turn over, that'll be a new experience for them. Now, this is probably a different situation than a lot of sports. I would imagine Wichita State softball is going to be in a position to be very competitive with bringing in players in the softball world. But is that something that this staff has had to do before, to your knowledge? I don't remember it having to do something like that.
Well, I think you've had, you know, traditionally in the old school or traditional system, you're going to have large senior classes that you have to replace. And that's certainly been the case in the portal era. This is probably the most that she's had. But at the end of the day, there not a lot of them are surprises, guys. And I think one of the advantages of the many advantages that we have at Wichita State with respect to our softball program is you've got a great facility that's being constructed. Certainly you can recruit to that. You can recruit to history, tradition, player development. You don't have to look back too many years to find some remarkable All-American type talent that was recruited and developed at Wichita State. That's really important as well. And then we've talked about it before on your show, guys. I think we're going to be able to do things at Wichita State in terms of additional scholarships and roster resources in the form of revenue share for a sport like softball that we're relatively confident our competitive peers in the league will not be able to do. So those are three or four advantages there that should position us really well to recruit well this offseason.
It's an interesting situation we'll keep an eye on. And then, of course, the other big thing for Wichita State yesterday is Paul Mills came on here with us and then did a bigger scrum later in the day out there, finally able to talk a little bit about the class that's come together, which means everybody can. You guys have those guys, for the most part, on campuses and at least, you know, paperwork signed. I don't know what you think about this class. I think it has become really interesting because it seems to be a good fit, right? Like I think there is a pretty clear goal that was, you know, I want to say achieved by the coaching staff. I don't know what it was like out there on the streets, but the types of players that the coaches were able to bring in all make a lot of sense for if you had to start a roster for Wichita State, what you'd want to see.
Yeah, I think you can see some themes obviously come through guard play and the ability to score from outside was certainly a priority, an emphasis on defense at multiple positions was certainly a priority. The ability to score with our back to the basket down low was certainly a priority, and I think that was addressed with this class. So you start looking at the guards. You've got Michael Gray that we signed from Nicholls State, 6'2", 200 pounds, gives you some size. Played 23 minutes a game, scored in double digits, good rebounder, 41% from 3-point. So how that translates into the American Athletic Conference remains to be seen. You got a Kenyon Giles, 5'11", 170 from UNC Greensboro, 40% from three-point shooting on 6.6 attempts. So very good there. You got Tyrus, the freshman, that's 190th in the country. Top 200 player, really good, All-American, McDonald's All-American nominee. Brian Amuniki is a really intriguing one, a sophomore from Fresno State, 6'5", 181. Played about 21 minutes a game, guys. He was the last 12 to 15 games. His productivity was really, really good in a very difficult Mountain West conference. He shot 41% from three-point over the course of that time period. Keandre Kendall, as you guys know, from Butler County, won a national championship. He's a six-foot guard, good scoring guard. And then you got Joy and TJ coming back as well. So really excited about that. And then, you know, we can get into the other positions if you'd like, but I think at the end of the day, you're seeing outside shooting, you're seeing defense, you're seeing the ability to score with your back to the basket in the post. And we've talked defensively. I think we've got three guys that were on their respective league's all defensive team, which is typically the top five to seven defenders in their respective league. And then you've got Caron Boyd, who's a 6'5 forward, 218-pound senior from East Tennessee, that was the Southern Conference Defensive Player of the Year. TJ is a very good defender. So you see those themes start to come through, and we're excited about this group that's going to be on campus here in about a week.
Yeah, I think the themes there, of course, you know, replacing the down low scoring of Quincy and Corey is, I don't know that that was ever going to be a reasonable expectation. That's why I like what they've done. It's going to look a little different.
It'll well, and Jacob, I think it's an interesting point when you talk about down low scoring for Quincy, right? Quincy, if you look at the facts on offensive efficiency ratings over the last 2 years, he's the most improved player yeah. in the country from a development standpoint, right? So really good. But if you think about traditional scoring in the post, in 18 league games, Quincy had a one-on-one situation with his back to the basket to score, I think, maybe seven times in 18 league games, and he was 0-for-7. That's not Quincy's strength.
Right.
Quincy's strength was rim protector, pick and roll, rebounder, you know, putting buckets back down low. At the end of the day, I think the goal with this class was to try and find some guys that could do a little something down low and score with their back to the basket as well.
His development has been one of my favorite things to watch in the modern generation of Shocker basketball. And he didn't start that way. And I think if you're looking at some of these other players coming in, that's what you look like. Quincy wasn't there in the beginning. He got there. Maybe one of these guys can too. I know that character is so important to you guys. Have you had a chance to spend any time with the new players at all yet? I know they haven't started practicing or anything, but how much of that have you been able to see in this early part of the process?
Yeah, great question. And before we leave the development piece, I think another thing that folks would be interested to hear is 2 years ago, Xavier Bell was ranked in KenPom. He was ranked 91st of 93 guards in the American Athletic Conference. And last year is a first team all AAC, which means, you know, he's a top five guard. So that development piece, I think, is firmly in place. You've got the ability to churn out some first team all conference players, second team all conference players, players of the week. We had a national player of the week in Corey, the Oscar Robinson national player of the week. So that development piece is really good. The guys have not been on campus yet. I've met a few through the recruiting process, but not all of them. Character is incredibly important. And I would tell you guys, that's the most challenging thing to get to in this condensed, pressure-packed, narrow time window of the transfer portal, is finding guys that absolutely love basketball, that want to come in here and compete for their position, that aren't scared to compete for their position. And I think they've done a nice job in that, but time will tell as we get these guys on campus in June.
Yeah, that's the story, boy. Isn't that the story for every team across the country, it feels like, this year? But the players, the mix on paper, I think it looks pretty good, Kevin. Hopefully you make a trip out to Florida, because Wichita State baseball makes a little noise in this conference tournament. That game today, again, 3 or 4 o'clock, our coverage will begin whenever it is here on KFH. You'll hear Shocker baseball as you always do. Mike Kennett will be on the call, and we'll see if Wichita State can do it. We will, next time we talk, I believe you guys will have them on campus and maybe just beginning practice. It might be like the first day.
Yep.
So we appreciate it.
Absolutely.
And thanks for the connection.
Yep. Thanks so much for the time, guys. Appreciate the opportunity to be on the show, and go Shockers.
Here goes Kevin Saul, Wichita State Athletic Director. Always appreciate the visits there. Tommy will be back, and we had to step out there for just a second. So it's perfect timing with Kevin. We appreciate his time always here on the radio. Look, I'm with you. If you missed anything with Paul Mills yesterday, or you missed anything with Kevin, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. Nobody knows across the country. There's just so much turnover what it's going to be. So the only thing we can look at right now is what it looks like on paper. And on paper, I think this collection of players in Paul Mills yesterday, the most probably topical thing he said is that they're not done yet. I don't know what that situation looks like, but he said they're still evaluating and actively seeking another player to bring in. So they're not done yet. But at minimum, it makes sense on paper. They've got a bunch of dudes that know how to play defense, and they bring in guys that have been shot makers, you know, from three specifically before. So you can catch all that on the Odyssey app. That'll do it for hour one. We'll get Tommy back in here. I think we got to continue the conversation about the tush push. A little unexpected, but it's a good one. It's an interesting one. We'll have some viewer comments. Stick with us. Another hour of Sports Daily coming right.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, everybody, welcome in to another hour of Sports Daily. We are glad to be here with you on a Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday. Congratulations. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday to all those who celebrate, like myself, like Max. It's a movement. It's a lifestyle. You can get on board or not, or you can sit back and watch the rest of us have all this fun. Glad to be here with you on this Monday. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a part of our program. We talk about it all the time. We love being out there. They've got the huge Memorial Day bash coming up this weekend. Tommy, I have said the pool is the thing that we use more than anything, and they've renovated it. And I don't know if you've seen it since you've been out there, but they've got some cabanas up. They extended it out. They're redoing a bunch of stuff. We love that pool. One of the main reasons we love it, we'll find out. You and I will both be at the big Memorial Day bash, so say hi. Is because it's what is it going to be like 71 degrees and cloudy? They can heat that sucker up. Baby.
It's not going to be, like a traditional, and I feel like this always happens, like usually around Memorial Day, you get kind of cool weather and rainy and whatever. So it doesn't really feel like pool party weather necessarily when you look at the forecast, but they can certainly do a lot to make it fun.
Well, you heat the pool up. It's the best pool in town. If you haven't seen, it's got the big high dive and all that stuff but they can heat it up. And so, yeah, it'll be just fine. Give Crestview a call. Ask about the facilities and everything else. They have stuff for you, even if you don't play golf. You know, that's the thing about it. So give Todd a call out there. Take a tour of the facility. And we're a couple of weeks away from some fun stuff with the listeners here that we'll be able to do with you guys out there. So stay tuned for all that. All right, Tommy, this is a little bit unexpected, but it's good. Let's go back to the tush push here. We've got some comments on it. John says on YouTube, and thanks for sticking with us, John, and you can always reach out to the program, Facebook, YouTube, X. You can leave us audio messages on the Odyssey app. The tush push, it's not a football play at all, but the only way to ban it fairly would be to ban all pushing across the board. I'd be fine with that if that's what you need to do. Am I forgetting about a situation that could negatively benefit or affect? I don't think there's another pushing. I don't really care. I don't think.
I mean, you can absolutely push a running back across the goal line.
Yeah, the pile push.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what they'd do with that. That's interesting.
You'd have to ban it all. You'd have to ban like that.
Well, because it was banned. I mean, right? You couldn't do that for a long time, which is where a lot of people, myself included, have been confused on this. Rick says you can't pull, but you can push. That's like we do all these little things. It's not going to be difficult for the league to do this, and ultimately, I think they will. Maybe they won't. Maybe they won't. But I think that they will. And it's not even really like there's no. This isn't one of those like right wrong. It's an interesting thing, and I think the reason we've spent more time on it this morning than at least I thought we would, is because there's kind of a mixed bag on it. I think it makes the game boring. I don't like it. It's not because it's an illegal play. It's not because the Eagles shouldn't be commended for doing it so well. It's not anything else. I just see what's coming. If it, you know, if nothing's done with it, teams are all going to start figuring out how to get really good at it. And now it's not just Eagles games where you're like, ah, crap, third and one, like foregone conclusion, like just skip to the next first down. Like when we start to see half the league, the full league doing that, now we've lost that play. That's what I fear with it. And that's why I think they should change it. But I mean, I get the other side of it. Stop it.
I'll go back to the Patriots example again, not necessarily just the Tom Brady example, but you remember the days when it was pretty much automatic that Tom Brady would find one of his tight ends to convert on a third down. Like it was, he converted all the freaking time on that. I guess easy answer would have been, yeah, just ban that. Just ban a short pass to a tight end because he's converting it all the time. And it's unfair because the defenses can't stop it. Like that's the same kind of logic in banning something like this, because there are so many different things that
Totally agree. I don't totally agree with that because they changed the pushing rule. But even if it did, even once, my counter would still be the same in that at least that's an exciting play, right? At least that's a fun play to watch, a more fun play to watch. There's nothing fun about
that. It's so subjective.
I totally agree. It's 100% subjective, but so was changing contact at the line. So what, like this is a league that is totally subjective in its rule changing. It does it every year. It's subjective. So if it's subjective, if it has this history of being subjective, then just do the subjective thing and take out a boring play. I mean, I think
I just hate legislating something that is, because I disagree with what John said when he said it's not a football play. It absolutely is a football play. I mean, the whole thing, like everything that they do is a football play. So I do think you're legislating play.
With the pushing being allowed, but that was a rule change. That didn't used to be allowed.
For 20 years. It's not like they changed this a year ago and this is the result of it. This has been a rule change for the last 20 years. And it just so happened that a team in the Philadelphia Eagles figured out a way to make it work so where they could convert on third or fourth down and short a large portion of the time. They shouldn't be, and I don't like the Eagles, don't get me wrong, but they shouldn't be penalized because they found a way to have success on third and fourth and short. They should not be penalized for this.
I don't look at it as a I'm not saying that the Eagles should be penalized. I don't think anybody's – well, some people might be saying that because they're very unlikable. But I think for me, again, it's just I don't think that play is what the NFL's going for in its product. And so at the end of the day, I mean, they're trying to make kick returns happen. That is a player safety issue. Kick returns are a player safety issue. High-speed collisions, but they want to bring it back. Why? Because it's an exciting play. And that's what the league does all the time. My point is there's a history of this, right? Like it's not, this wouldn't be unprecedented for them to come in and be like, yeah, no, we don't like that. We're going to be done with that. It's not like baseball where we had to like really change what's ever been done in baseball to make the kind of legislative changes that they made a couple of years ago. And it 100% made the game better. No doubt about it. They made the game better. And the NFL, I always commend the NFL because they're always changing things to make their product a more enjoyable product. So for me, that's all it is. It's a more enjoyable product without that play. That's all it is for me. There's no like, I don't like the history of whatever. I think that specific play is a boring play and this league makes a living getting rid of boring things. That's why I think they'll change it. That's why I would change it. And I think that's why they will change it. I don't think it's 100%. I've got like a 50-50 vibe on whether I think this will change.
Do you think that the regular old quarterback sneak is a boring play?
If it was used as often, like if it was to the point where it's like they're going to quarterback sneak and it's going to be successful 90% of the
time. That's not my question. Yes. Do you think the overall quarterback sneak is a boring
play? Yeah, I do. I think it's a boring
play. So then we should outlaw that as well.
Well, if it starts being used the way that
do you think
is,
that, you know, could, when yeah. Kyle Juszczyk gets the ball for the 49ers to convert on a third and or fourth and one and it's just a fullback dive up the middle. Is that a boring play?
It is.
Probably should be outlawed then.
Not over the history of football going to be successful 90%.
Probably should be out. If the criteria is a boring play to make the product better, then there are plenty of them. Let's start outlawing all of them.
I'm willing to have the discussion. I get what you're trying to
do. I'm just saying that logic is a really slippery slope. If it's boring in your opinion, whether or not it actually, I mean, who knows? I mean, that's everybody's opinion one way or the other on whether or not something is boring. But if that's the logic on banning the tush push, there are plenty of other boring plays in the NFL should be totally outlawed.
It's been the logic though. That's what I'm saying. It's been the logic for a long time. Like the league makes a history of doing it.
Does a simple wide receiver slant, is that a boring play? A lot of times it is. Like when Wes Welker was catching the ball over the middle on just a short 4-yard slant, it's a fairly boring play. It's not like all bells and whistles. It's just a standard play in the NFL. If we're going by that logic, they all should be banned then.
I understand what you're saying. It's what they've done forever, though. Like that, so I get it. But they can avoid all of this, to John's point, by just saying no more pushing players. Like now you're not targeting that specific play. You're just saying you can't do that thing ever.
And anymore. Rick chimes in and says, at least the player is getting yards on his own and not getting help. What do you call blocking, Rick? Like these players are getting blocked. They're getting helped by every other player on the offense to help them get yards. When Kyle Juszczyk gets the ball for the 49ers and runs it for 3 yards up the middle to get a first down, you don't think he's getting blocks? That's getting help from other players. So if you want to just have the player do everything on his own, then ban blocking too. Like, I feel like this is like a really slippery slope that we're getting into. I just don't feel like it's that big of a deal to legislate it at the ownership level. That's my only point.
Yeah, I get it. The slippery slopes existed forever. Like do you want it gone or not? I mean, it's fine. Like they'll make their decision. It's just none of it's unprecedented. None of it's that big a deal. And if you don't want that, like if you're wanting to avoid the slippery slope that you're talking about, you do what John does. Just you ban the push again. You just don't let players get pushed. Then it doesn't.
Yeah, that's fine with me. If you're going to do that, just ban pushing in general.
Yes.
That in a roundabout way takes care of itself.
It does. And I think that's probably the way they would do it. To avoid what you're talking about, and I'd be fine with it. We're none of us are missing anything. Scrum, push, like, so what? Like, that's not that big a deal. All right, we'll come back. Let's get the Royals when we return. We got more Sports Daily coming your way.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
All right, let's talk Royals, Tommy. You got 4 1/3 scoreless in a tight game, your bullpen, and it wasn't even like your elite part of the bullpen. Man, those have got to be games the Royals can figure out a way to win. The Giants started a guy who's kind of been up and down in the bullpen, and Birdsong's been okay. But even like if you were watching the game last night, Hudler was talking about this. Like he was leaving pitches flat. Like he was like, oh man, they're going to get him if he keeps doing it. And they just like, I don't know. I don't remember ever seeing a team that should be a better offense just collectively sort of, I mean, do we call it a slump? Because they're not all slumping necessarily. It's just not productive. It's becoming a little strange, honestly, to watch it every night. But it is what it is. And so you get, you know, you don't get Lorenzen's best stuff, not even close. But he kept him in the game, and then the bullpen really kept him in the game. And to your point that you've brought up before, like, it just, man, it feels like if they're down 2-1, 3-1, even in the fourth inning, they're no chance. They got no chance to come back and win that game. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, they really, outside of Michael Garcia, who's been the most consistent offensive producer right now, I mean, it's been rough. Vinny Pasquantino, I thought, looked better than what he's looked. I mean, I think obviously he hit a home run in the opening game of this series, but he was 1-for-3 last night, added a walk onto that as well. I thought he looked pretty solid for the most part offensively, and his hit last night was to the opposite field, which is good. So I think that there are a couple of small silver linings, but one of the things I've noticed a lot, and I don't know if you've recognized this too, but by and large, I feel like a lot of the hits that the Royals get, it'll be like a two out single, you know, they finally scrape across a hit and there's two outs and they get a runner on first. And then the next guy up just, you know, grounds out or strikes out or whatever.
But yeah, that shouldn't be a death sentence, right? Like that. Yeah, okay, great. A two out rally, right? Like yeah. Big, here we go. Like it's, right. But it is like, it's like, what's the point in their last 11 games? Okay, 11 games, which is four series. They'll finish the series today. I don't know if you've looked at this. How many times do you think they've scored more than 3 runs in those 11 games?
Once.
Twice. Four, right? And
yeah.
10.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's, I think it was 7. I should. But it is like in the little spurts that you get offense from them, it'll all come at once, right? And then a month ago, you were making fun of me when they were on the streak. And I'm like, but they're not scoring. And like, this is it. This is why. This is the whole point of that entire exercise was like, this is not sustainable. Like, it's not. Like, you can't score fewer than 3 runs a game, basically, and expect good results in baseball. I don't care how good your pitching is. It is, I mean, it's bad. It's wild, honestly, that they have been able to win the amount of games that they've been able to win. Like the fact that they are very much in it, the fact that we don't have to panic yet, the fact that they're 5.5 games out, but 4 games over 500, all of these things, despite, right, scoring as few of runs as they've scored, is why the only teams in their range, The White Sox have scored about 5 fewer runs than the Royals this year, have 15 wins. The Orioles, who have scored more runs but are in that lower threshold, right? 15 wins. The Rays Rays scored 20 more runs. They're not even in that threshold. The Rangers are the only other team in baseball, really, where you're seeing that kind of anemic production not be a death sentence. Colorado is in that range. They've won 8 games. Pittsburgh is in that range. They've won 16. Like, it's wild that they have been able to do this. And, you know, you tip your cap to the pitching staff, but the, you know, What we're seeing is when they're playing good teams, it ain't working. They've only won 3 of their last 10 games, right? Like that win streak was very much schedule aided. They're playing the same brand of baseball. They still have really good pitching. They still weren't hitting, but the difference is they're playing quality teams. It's not sustainable. Like they're going to fall out of this thing if something doesn't change. And the other part that amplifies it, of course, is that A, the Tigers right now are the best team in baseball, and B, there's two other teams in the mix in that division. So it's not like it's like, okay, well, we'll get them to the deadline and they'll make their, they can't do that in the American League this year. They'll fall out of this thing. That's the danger.
You're not wrong. And I remember a week ago saying that I wasn't at that point ready to panic about Salvador Perez specifically. But I reserve the right to change my mind as the week, you know, goes on. And I'm sounding alarm bells right now. Here's the most concerning thing about Salvi in the cleanup spot right now as it stands. He's got the third most at-bats on the team behind Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino. And he has the second worst WAR currently. Minus 1.2 is his WAR right now, second only to Hunter Renfro. And we all know how unplayable Hunter Renfro has basically been this entire season. That's a problem. It's a problem when your cleanup hitter has the second worst WAR on the entire roster. And so, and that has come into form over the last week. I mean, I know he's been slumping prior to that, but it's been glaring on full display.
Yeah.
Multiple games in a row. He was 0-for-4 again last night. He looks honestly lost at the plate. He looks like he's pressing. He looks like he's just whiffing at balls out of the strike zone that he shouldn't even be swinging at. Like, it's not good right now. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that if you're looking at kind of a microcosm view of the Royals offense in general, at this point, it does start with your cleanup hitter, and that's the captain.
It's been really, really bad. He can't be your cleanup hitter. I still don't have a problem because there's a lot of teams in baseball. He's 35 years old. Give him some days off. There's a lot of teams in baseball that don't have offensive production from their catchers. So it's not like if you stack it up, right? They're not losing some major part. His average has dropped though almost 30 points in the last like 10 days. Like that period of time where he was really starting to, you know, to get it together is now almost a month ago.
I mean, even Vinny's WAR is in the positives now. I mean, he's not hitting great, but at least it's more consistent than it was before. And he's gotten himself back up to a point to where his average is almost 230, which for a while it was below 200. You know, he's got an OPS creeping up to around 700, you know? So like, I think at this point, not that you take the focus totally off of Vinny, but I think it is squarely right now on Perez and what they're going to do with him.
Do you know how many walks, Tommy, do you think Salvador Perez has in the month of May?
Zero.
One. It's the problem, right? It is the problem. And he's a swing guy. Like, he swings the bat. I get it. But, right, he has one walk this month. That, like, put him down in the lineup. You don't have to play him every day. I get he's the captain. He is not going to have that much of a problem, I don't think. If you move him down the lineup, put him in the 7 hole, whatever it is, let him figure it out, but don't have him figure it out on the fly in key situations of every game you're playing when you are so desperate to score runs.
And I've seen a lot of chatter, by the way, that people are wondering if he's healthy, you know,
I've wondered that for a long time.
And if that's the case, okay, don't play him then, because he's currently a liability. Give him a little bit of time off. If he's injured, if whatever is ailing him is contributing to him not being able to produce at the plate, put him on the IL. They've got enough guys. Like, you could have Freddie Fermin call back up. I know they designated for assignment Luke Maley. I don't know if they would bring him back or whatever that would look like. But for a while, they were carrying three catchers up until a couple of days ago on the active roster. Like, give Salvi, if he is truly injured, that clearly would be contributing to why he's not producing at the plate. Give him some time off.
Make it up. Pretend he's injured if he's right. Not. Give him a 10 day, just give him one little stint down there. I will tell you this though, as he struggles, I think the likelihood of Cags getting the call goes up because it's becoming more justifiable for him not to play 150 games this year. Now, Salvador Perez is, and I've said this before, probably on a personal level, my favorite baseball player that didn't play for the Texas Rangers ever. That's how much I like Salvi. That's how much I appreciate what he brings to the game. That's how much I like his energy, all of these things. I'm not going to advocate yet for his time to be done or anything that drastic, but I think they can do more to help him. I wish they could come into it, Tommy, and say, you know what, Salvi, you're not allowed to swing on the first pitch. You must watch a pitch. Remember Albert Pujols used to do that. You must watch a pitch. Like, you cannot swing at the first pitch. There's not a more 0-2 prone player in baseball than Salvador Perez. There can't be.
Do you know what his strikeout rate has been on the season? Almost 23%. 23% of the time that he's up to the plate, he's striking out. You've got, and you mentioned the stats about walks in the month of May. His walk percentage is under 5. It's like 4.5%. Like, that, those two things need to go in opposite directions. You need to see that strikeout rate go down. Even if he got it under 20, that's a win at this point, and get the walk percentage up some. Like, at this point, Salvi, like, you're doing more harm than good by swinging at pitches. You might be better off just keeping the bat on your shoulder when you go up there.
He's not, look, let's just take this exercise because I have it pulled up. Neither of those things are unusual for him. We'll put it that way. He's never had more than, it looks like, 45 walks in a season, right? Like, he doesn't walk a ton. He doesn't. He also strikes out. I mean, he's not terribly off his pace, 145 strikeouts and 155. And I'm just looking at pace here. Last year, he struck out 129 times in 158 games. 2023. He struck out 135 in 140 games. His big season, remember, in 2021, Tommy, he struck out 170 times in 161 games. He only walked 28 times. So a part of the problem is this is always what Salvi's done, but there's nothing else coming with it, right? There's no power. There's no pop coming with all of that. With those numbers, the fact that he's had decent to good on base percentages over his career, he hits the ball. But that's not happening this year. Like, he has like no juice, which makes me think he's hurt, right? That lends itself to the something physically is not there. He's never walked a ton, but right now as he's struggling, like, you got to see him walk. And if he can't get there, yeah, either slide him down, sit him down two times a week, like, whatever. You got to help him, because right now he's not helping himself. He's getting in there and he's struggling. Like, help him a little bit. They've been able to do that with Vinny. I don't know why they haven't been able to do it with Salvi, but it's time. It's time for him to have a day off. I don't know that they put their lineup out yet today. It's a day game today. How about we give Salvi the day off today? That would be a place to start. And then maybe just give him a chance to succeed a little bit. Slide him down. What could they call it? Hip? Didn't he hurt his hip? He's on the IL with a little hip fatigue for 10 days. And then you just let him get in the cage and just relax a little bit.
You can definitely tell that he's got kind of the weight of the world on his shoulders. And I get it. He's the captain. He's the captain of the team. He's the veteran. You know, he's got all of these expectations to be the guy who leads the Royals back to the playoffs this year. And unfortunately, it's not working out right now the way that it should. But the good thing about Salvi is that you don't even necessarily need him to be this juggernaut. You don't need him to be an all-star. You don't need him to hit 40 home runs. You don't need him to do all these things. You just need him to not do more harm than good at the plate. And unfortunately, right now, he's doing more harm than good.
Yeah, and it's a big enough sample size where it's not just a... Now, To be fair, he did. I mean, this really bad stretch has come in the last 2 weeks. I mean, it has. He was hitting the ball for a while there. And so I don't want to, the other part of it too, that's probably not fair to him, is to discount his role in what the pitching is doing.
Absolutely. 100%.
So I think it's unlikely, unless he really is hurt, that he goes to the aisle, but just move him down in the lineup at minimum, right? Let him struggle down there instead of in the four hole. And let anybody, like, just put Mikel Garcia in the four hole. That dude's hitting everything now. Like, he's at least putting the ball in play. Like, get him wherever you
need
him.
And remember last year, the whole conversation surrounding Bobby Witt Jr. was the fact that whoever was batting leadoff was never getting on base. And so Bobby wasn't able to drive in runs because there wasn't anybody to set the table for him. It's kind of the same thing for Mikel Garcia a little bit further down the lineup this year. If Salvi's not getting on base and he's batting immediately before Mikel Garcia, then nobody's really setting the table for Garcia to be able to drive in runs either.
I've long said there's nothing more frustrating in baseball than a bad bullpen. Watching the Royals every day and being a fan of the Rangers this year, watching offenses not produced to the level they're supposed to for this long is pretty close to bad bullpen play. Like, it is tough, man.
By the way,
like, those are the two teams I'm watching every night, and I'm just like, oh, my God, can somebody hit the ball hard somewhere?
How do you feel, by the way, about Daniel Lynch getting the nod today in the finale?
I'm okay with it. I don't know how long he'll go in the game, but I'm okay with it. I like it. I would imagine it's as a part of a bullpen game, though. If it's not, then we got something to talk about tomorrow. That would be pretty interesting if it's not like a 2-3 inning appearance for Daniel Lynch. But it's an earlier game today, which will be nice, right? Like we won't have to stay up until almost midnight watching the Royals, which would be great. Get a little day baseball, get a chance to win a series, right? You go up against the Giants. I think we can call Webb their ace. You go up against the Giants ace, doesn't seem to matter. Royals are going to score one or two runs, whether it's your ace or your five hole guy. So, you know, what does it matter? But that's what we have today, and we'll see if they can get it done. The Daniel Lynch piece is certainly interesting as we watch Chris Bubich, and maybe that could be Daniel Lynch next year. But I don't know that it would be a good thing if it's this year, because that would mean somebody is more seriously hurt. But we'll watch it today. I think it'll be a bullpen game. We are rocking and rolling into the fun time of year. And we're doing it with a little NBA playoffs here, Tommy. Thunder, they're up 1-0 on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Somewhere, we got to pour one out for a guy, Brandon Zenner, who believes Minnesota's going to win this series. He's a T-Wolves fan. He's a Minnesota sports fan. But not last night. Oklahoma City really flexed on them in the second half. You know, and all the Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA, he's an old school scorer, right? He does a lot of his work at the line. Some of my favorite players have been that kind of player. Allen Iverson comes to mind. But 14 free throws last night is not unreasonable. 31 points, though, 9 assists. He was fantastic, and he was better than Anthony Edwards, who is the other guy in this series that are the two headline guys. And Oklahoma City gets a 1-0 lead at home. Minnesota's got nothing to worry about. It's 1-0 at home. Who cares, right? But that was an impressive win.
Well, this team is absolutely elite defensively. And the fact that they can turn defense into offense, that's what propelled them to this victory last night. I think that what we saw in game one last night from the Thunder and what we saw in game seven in the Nuggets series, that's the Thunder team that I expected to see throughout the entire playoffs. And I think that they're rounding into form now. It's the reason why they are the betting favorite, why they've been the betting favorite, and why I think ultimately, regardless who comes out of the East, I think that the Thunder will be the NBA champions because they are stifling defensively. They can shut you down, they can turn you over, and then they can get scoring on the other end of the court from those turnovers. And with that recipe, that's why they've had so much success.
Neither of us pretend to be NBA experts. We don't watch as much of it as we used to. But yes, I think it's pretty clear that Oklahoma City is the favorite for a reason. I don't know that I would consider them like a heavy, heavy favorite, though. Like, I certainly don't even think this series is over.
My point is that if they can continue to execute like they did last night, they will be NBA champions.
Yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that. I do think Minnesota is... If I was power ranking the teams, I would probably put Minnesota 2. I'd probably go Oklahoma City, Minnesota, New York, Indiana. But I do, I am intrigued by the fact that, at least for me, I don't think the series is over by any means, and I don't think the finals is a foregone conclusion. I think when Oklahoma City's right, they're pretty clearly the best team, but they're not always right. You know, and the other teams will have coaching. I remember when I was talking, speaking of Brandon Zinner, I was talking to him before the series. So I like to pick his brain. He watches a ton of NBA. He's like, every one of these games in this series could be totally different by the way the teams like strategically approach it, right? Like they could do different things strategically in every single game. Both teams can because they're both really, really deep. And so that's going to make it a tough, like a tough series to take one to the next, like whatever happens in one game to take it to the next. So we'll keep an eye on that. But look, I love it for Thunder fans. I love it for that city. I think it's cool that the NBA has seen small market teams find success. You know, Oklahoma City is one of them. San Antonio is like the smallest market team. Of course, the NFL, it doesn't really matter. But in, you know, in baseball, it's hard for small market teams. And in basketball, you get it. Whether that's good or bad for the sport, I don't know. But I like that the Thunder have found the top of the mountain again. And I like that Minnesota's back there again. I think people wrote off Minnesota a few years ago as having, and they're right there too. I don't know how this seems so good. I don't know how they were a six seed, but we'll see if they can get it done. I'm with you. I think Oklahoma City is going to win this series. I've thought that from the beginning. I hope that it's competitive. I hope that it's close, as the playoffs have been most of the time this year, but Oklahoma City didn't make it close last night, and especially not in the second half.
Like, yeah.
They dominated that second half.
And when you say that when Oklahoma City is right, they are clearly the favorites. They've been right two games in a row. So we're not talking about kind of a in every other type game and what happens if they fall off a cliff. We've got a little bit of a trend now where two games in a row, game seven against Denver and then last night game one against Minnesota. That defense has been on full display. We talked about it the other day. The way that they defended Nikola Jokic in game seven, I think was incredibly impressive, and they carried that over the way that they defended Anthony Edwards and all of the Timberwolves for that matter. So, you know, being able to convert the turnovers into offense, I read this stat earlier that Oklahoma City, they have, it's something like the best in all time of points off turnovers in the playoffs. Like they have gotten more points off of their defense than any other team in NBA playoff history. And so again, that sort of thing travels. We've seen it the last two games, especially be in full effect, and having that continue on, they're going to be really hard to beat.
I think Oklahoma City, like long-term, has a chance to be moderately dynastic, but we've thought that about teams and it hasn't happened recently in the NBA, but man, it does feel like their arrow's pointed up still. And they're still ascending. It'll be interesting because they're not going to be able to do it with bringing in big time free agents, right? They'll have to do it internally. They don't get that benefit. Players don't go to Oklahoma City, right? Like they never went to Dallas. So what Dallas always struggled with, that Dallas could never get a free agent to come there. So it'll have to be internal, but it does feel like we're just kind of scratching the surface with them. I agree with that. It's, you know, do they flip that switch right now in the Western Conference Finals? Maybe. I mean, they definitely could. Denver took them to seven games, though, and I think Minnesota might be better than Denver, so I'm not going to write off Minnesota just yet after one game. I think it's a little bit early for that. You excited for Pacers-Knicks? I don't know about you.
No.
Like, growing up.
Not particularly.
I loved that rivalry. That was one of my favorite rivalries. Pacers. Those Pacers-Knicks series were so fun. And I don't know if you can stoke any of that in this, but I'm excited. I think Jalen Brunson's an exciting player. That's what I'm excited about. What can he do in this series? And I look, the Pacers, when you come up with those lists of like who are the most not thought of franchises across all of sports, like who are the Pacers?
The Pacers
are
totally on that list.
So I think it's cool that they're there. Yeah, I mean, I like that they're there.
Outside of Reggie Miller, I mean, you know, like that's who you think of when you think of the Pacers, right?
You better not slander Rick Smits.
Well,
name.
I mean, yeah, come on. Rick Smits, yeah, I'll take
Duncan
it.
Duncan Dutchman.
Yeah.
You better not.
Look, I think that one of the things that will be key in this series is if you just look at how these two coaches pair up against each other. I mean, Rick Carlisle is one of the more underappreciated coaches in the NBA. He's been around forever, and he's had a tremendous amount of success. I think he's a better coach than Tom Thibodeau. And I know that even though the Knicks have found their way into the semis in the Eastern Conference, just kind of the way that Thibodeau is, I mean, he gets a lot of slander from even like fans of the Knicks, right? Like a lot of fans don't like him. I think his personality is a little grating. It is what it is. But if you're just stacking up the coaches compared to one another, I mean, I think you have to give the nod to the Pacers in that regard. I think Carlisle's a better coach.
I'm not sure I'm taking any coach over Carlisle.
Yeah.
No offense to Tibbs, and I like that he's a hard ass, but like from Carlisle, you don't have the success he's had at so many different places. Like that dude is so good at what he does. Big Rick Carlisle fan. I don't know. I can't decide who I'm going for in that series. That's the interesting part for me. Like I want them both to win. I like them both. I think the Knicks fan base, as much as New York fans might, but I think Knicks fans are cool. Like I think they deserve it. I really do. And I think the Pacers are a cool team. Like I love Tyrese Halliburton. Like I think they're a cool team. And I love Rick Carlisle. And I think that organization's cool. So I'll be good. I'll be good just watching. I don't have a rooting interest in that one. I like them both. I really like all four teams. To be perfectly honest with you, I'm going to be happy and satisfied no matter who the NBA champion is. I like all four of these teams. And all four have any of these teams? I mean, I know the Knicks have won a championship, but it's been a long time. I mean, we're getting fresh blood here no matter what. It's been, I don't think the Pacers or obviously the Thunder did not ever get it done. And
well, I'm also trying to think, like, when was the last time that any of these teams were even in the NBA Finals? I mean, I know the Thunder made it at one point in that span of time, right? That'd be the most recent.
That would be the most recent.
Outside of that, and obviously the Knicks back way far, but... Through? I don't know.
I don't think they did. I don't think they did. And the Pacers, the problem for both of those organizations is their quote unquote glory years most recently were up against the Bulls, which.
So the Knicks, the last time they were actually in the finals was 1999. So it's been a long time. The Pacers made it in 2000. They were in the NBA finals against the Lakers in 2000.
God, I hated those Lakers teams. I can't believe I don't remember that. I felt like I guess that's true. Yeah. And I kind of do remember that. But
the Timberwolves have never been in the finals.
Did they ever make it before they were the Timberwolves back in, weren't they the Lakers first, right? Minnesota? I don't, whatever. Either way, we're not NBA historians here on Sports Daily, unfortunately for everybody. I'm good with any champion. I'm good with any champion that comes out of the NBA this year. I know that we have more Thunder fans than anywhere, so root for them just fine. Max,
the Lakers, when they were in Minneapolis back in the 50s and 60s or whatever, they won 5 championships in Minneapolis, but we're talking 60, 70 years ago.
And the Lakers stole those 5 championships soon.
Okay, here we go, Max.
Is Oklahoma hanging a Seattle Supersonic flag? Does Atlanta hang the St. Louis Hawks championship flag? Thank you.
I think the reason why Max is so upset about this is he was actually at those games back in the 50s when the Minneapolis Lakers won the title.
Not that he old. Was there as a college student right, he in was, the 50s.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Max is actually 97 years old. I'm not sure if anybody knew that.
That's right. I'm convinced that Max, instead of watching things that are happening now, just watches old games on YouTube.
The NBA is unwatchable. When you get more yards per travel than a running back. No, sorry.
You're not going to get like I enjoy college basketball a lot more now. For sure. I do. There's no question about that. But I still, when you get to this point of the NBA, I'm still a pretty big fan. Not like I used to be. Not like it's been the last decade. And honestly, it's a total professional outcome. I just watch more college basketball now and follow it closer because that's what I do for a living. And I've kind of found myself gravitating to it. But at this point, I think the NBA is great. And I think it's great when you have parity, and they absolutely do have parity right now. Max, Carolina and Florida.
It's over for Carolina.
Really? They don't have a prayer, huh?
They don't have a prayer against Florida.
Okay.
Edmonton will have a prayer against Florida.
Speaking of franchises, that I contend that the Florida Panthers hockey franchise is the most forgettable professional sports franchise. That'll do it for Sports Daily on a Wednesday. Happy Hawaiian Shirt Wednesday again, everybody. Hope you celebrate all day long. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll have Tim Fitzgerald in. We will have some fun. We'll have the Royals trying to win a series in San Francisco.
Yeah, the Royals have the chance to salvage the series and take it from San Francisco today and then an off day tomorrow before a big divisional matchup this weekend in Minnesota.
That'll be a fun series. Minnesota is very much back and for real. So we'll have all that for you. Enjoy the day, everybody. We'll be back for Max, for Tommy. I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.